RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
JB Hanley is a proud father of a child with autism. He graduated from Stanford University with honours, and his first book, How to End the Autism Epidemic, was published in September 2018, selling more than 75,000 copies. It made it onto the top 40 on Amazon. And JB and his non-speaking son, Jameson, are also the authors of Underestimated and Autism Miracle. They co-produced the award-winning documentary, The Spellers, the film Spellers, based on their book and available now on YouTube. JB is on social media, X. He's on Substack under JB Hanley Blog, and he does podcasts as well. And we've asked JB on to talk about bringing attention to the true causes of autism. We've discussed this before on this radio station, highlighting the scientific findings that people with autism have high levels of aluminium and need to review how vaccines play a part in this. JB Hanley, thank you for coming on all the way from Oregon, USA. We really appreciate it.
It's truly my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I hope you don't mind the aluminium. I know it's aluminum where you're from, but that's how we say it down here.
Man, I can handle it. I have to tell you, during COVID, was anybody dumber than your countrymen? It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
That's a very good question. And yeah, no one was dumber than us.
It was unbelievable. You know, that was a really weird time. I'm already digressing. I'll definitely get back to the autism.
That's okay.
But, you know, if you were in the States, people don't appreciate that the states are organized in what we call a federalist system, which means that each state actually has a lot more power than people understand. And so I was up here in communist Oregon that looked a lot like New Zealand. But we spent all of COVID traveling to Texas and Florida. It was like nothing ever changed. And I would sit there and watch what your crazy prime minister was doing to you guys. And anybody with a brain knew it was going to end in disaster. And of course it did. And it's just really tragic. And I just found the whole thing really fascinating because I'm sort of a big student of freedom, right? And I had always kind of put Canada on a pedestal as like our smarter neighbor up north. And yet those guys got completely locked down and couldn't do anything. And it was weird. I don't mean to draw a distinction between the States and New Zealand because we have tons of problems. But my God, I was happy for the federalist system. And I was oddly happy for the fact that we're well armed here. It was like it felt like without that, we were on the border of tyranny. And we had a couple of governors like DeSantis in Florida, and the Texas governor, Georgia, a few who just stood up and didn't take it. And they allowed us to kind of remain half free, whereas you guys just got destroyed.
Well, for a lot of us, it was a nightmare, actually, because we, like you're saying, we kind of figured out where this was going. And we were comparing ourselves to those states that you mentioned. If only we could be there, you know, a lot of us. But what we did find out about ourselves or our countrymen and women, JB, was they are so easily propagandized, persuaded. They are so willing to comply. And that herd mentality, it must have always been there, suddenly showed itself. And, you know, most people went along with it quite willingly and are still to 5,000 to 6,000 jabs per week in our population, still going along with it. So it was horrifying, but in a fascinating way, so revealing. You know,
there was an essay that came out during COVID, and it was called The Four Quadrants of Conformism. And it kind of went through these four boxes, right, in a matrix. And in like in the upper left corner, you were a quiet conformist. And that's where most people in a population sit. In the lower corner, you were a loud conformist, kind of telling others what to do. And then, of course, quiet nonconformist and then loud nonconformist, right? And the loud nonconformist box, which is where you and I both sit by definition, or we wouldn't be sitting here talking to him, right? We've passed the filter by the choices that we've made. Hitler knew to shoot all those people first, right? And so I grew to recognize that for as many Americans as I found to be sheep, it was just, that was a reality of human nature, right? And so the trick is to keep people out of positions of power who abuse that reality. But one of my favorite stories, there's this brown professor, and he teaches a class on conformism. And what he does is he asks all the students to raise their hand if they believe during slavery they would have stood up and fought for the slaves. And of course, how many hands go up in the room? 100%. I've always been a loud nonconformist. It's gotten me in trouble tons of times. And I know for people who are also in that quadrant, there's nothing you can do about it, you know? And thank God we exist to challenge people in positions of power, you know? So
yeah.
At any rate, I'm honored to be here. I would tell you that anytime that I have the opportunity to speak publicly, I'm really talking to other parents. That's always been my audience. And without being disrespectful to anybody else, it's kind of the only audience I care about, because I just feel like I've been through a war. And I just kind of want people to understand the truth. I've always just been a big fan of truth. And so if you don't mind, I'm just going to share a little bit of a narrative that I guess kind of melds, you know, what happened to me personally, what's happened to our kids, et cetera, and try and explain kind of how we got here. So as you're well aware, the United States tends to lead the rest of the world in terms of vaccination programs. So said differently, if it gets on the U.S. schedule, it's ultimately going to get on the New Zealand schedule and on the German schedule and everywhere else. For reasons that aren't clear to me, with some notable exceptions, we really drive how those things happen worldwide by what happens here, which is really unfortunate when you realize who the dipshits are that are controlling those decisions.
Yeah.
In 1986, very begrudgingly and with one arm kind of pushed up behind his back, Ronald Reagan had to sign a law that changed everything that most people don't appreciate, which effectively indemnified vaccine makers from liability. And he did so because the DTP vaccine at the time was brain damaging so many children that a few of the bot congressmen and senators came into the White House and said, if you don't indemnify vaccine makers, they're going to stop making vaccines. And as they tell everybody every time when they try to push vaccines on us, if you don't do this, millions of people will die, right? So yeah. Reagan was a good president, in my opinion. He even said that he loathed taking liability out of the equation because it broke down that tension that you have, right, between liability, culpability, profitability, et cetera. That is the legislation that triggered the age of autism, okay? Because, so I think I'm sure Kiwis are not a lot different nowadays. So you and I are obviously over the age of 40.
Yeah, well.
And when we were kids, if you're anything like me, I never met a kid with autism. Not
same.
One. I didn't. Yep. I had no idea. The first child that I met with autism was my own son.
Really?
Yeah. Right? I mean, that's just a true statement.
How old's your son, JB? How old's your son?
He's 22 now, so he was diagnosed 20 years ago.
Right.
Okay, so I've been fighting this fight since 2002. So any nurse, coach, doctor who could actually be honest, parent or person, come on, you didn't know one kid. Give me a break. They weren't anywhere. I never saw this. Okay, so the schedule grows massively right after the 1986 Act. By 1989, they're adding what I think are the two vaccines that have caused the most trouble, the hepatitis B vaccine and the HIV vaccine, and they add them to the schedule. They also, what people don't realize is that like in the mid-80s, there were kind of three vaccines that were given, MMR, polio, and DTaP. The vaccination rates in the U.S., as tracked by the CDC, were in the 50 to 60% range nationally. Like, but today, if we got anywhere near that rate, they'd have a global panic that the world was about to end. Our compliance rates for vaccines for children in the U.S. are around 95% right now. So think about that. In the 80s, it was in the 50s to 60s, and we were all fine. There were no kids dying in the streets. I can attest. I was there. So they add a bunch of vaccines to the schedule, but they also do a number of things to jack compliance way up. So it's a double whammy. People don't appreciate that those two things go together. And all of a sudden, you have all this asthma, autoimmunity, and neurological developments that all literally skyrocket out of that one period of time. You don't have to be that smart to wonder if something might be going on. So yeah. The most popular article that I have on my Substack starts with the words international scientists. And it talks about the science that has now, I believe, clearly and unequivocally shown, you know, what happened to my son, right? Because that's what I want to know. What happened to my son? And so here's the It's a relatively simple story. There is something called an immune activation event. It's basically when you have some kind of immune flare that takes place inside your brain. And immune activation events are not good. They're really not good for fetuses and babies, okay? A mother's illness can actually trigger an immune activation event. And it's actually true that a mom with a certain kind of illness on a certain day could actually affect her baby's neurological outcome. There's a professor at Caltech whose name is Paul Patterson, who kind of figured all this stuff out. And I talk about Dr. Patterson's studies at length. But basically, if you think about the fact that a baby's brain is going through all these different phases of development, if you have this massive flare that takes place at a certain moment, you can really screw things up. Well, guess what? Aluminum serves a singular purpose in, it's so funny, like if you go to like ChatGPT and you ask ChatGPT, can aluminum cause an immune activation event? It will tell you something like, that's its purpose, right? So it's literally, it's kind of like, it's as obvious as like the Wuhan Virology Institute. You know what I mean? Like for a while, they're like, oh, it couldn't possibly have come from there. You're like, how dumb do I look? You know, like, So basically here's how scientists now believe it happens. And my article, which takes you like an hour to read, goes through every little piece of science that got us to this point. It's pretty simple though. So the first thing people need to recognize is that the aluminum is in the vaccine to vaccinate the immune system. I mean, to activate the immune system, excuse me, because they're using a dead virus. And so the immune system has to be more active to kind of recognize it and then hopefully build some immunity up to it, right? The aluminum is man-made. It's not ionic, and it's obviously injected into your body. The man-made thing is a really big deal because it's called nanoparticle aluminum, and the body's never seen it before. All right. So it doesn't know what to do with it. It doesn't have ionic aluminum actually would probably be way better, frankly. So we put this nanoparticleized aluminum into the baby's body. We all have white blood cells. We can call those macrophages. The macrophages immediately go to this site where, you know, the skin's been pierced and now this toxin's been put in there, and they grab the nanoparticle aluminum. And by the way, there's step-by-step science that shows exactly how this is all happening. And so then that macrophage that grabbed the aluminum, it goes into the bloodstream and it crosses the blood-brain barrier and it leaves the nanoparticle aluminum in the brain. And then it triggers a brain, you have an immune system inside your brain. It triggers an immune activation event in the brain of the baby. Okay. Well, if there's enough aluminum at the right time and the baby's more vulnerable, et cetera, it can really screw up the development. And guess what they call that on the other end? ADHD, autism, milder, autism's the tiny tip of the iceberg for how badly we've screwed up a whole population of kids. And it's all right there. It's clear as day. And there's a professor named Chris Exley at Keele University, and he kind of delivered the final blow, if you will. He's arguably the world's leading neurotoxicologist on aluminum. And there were a bunch of brains of like teens with autism. These were, you know, unfortunately victims of car accidents and other things that allowed him to study their brains, and their parents donated the brains to science. And of course, he found in the brains of children with autism meaningfully higher levels of aluminum than in their neurotypical peers. And so for whatever reason, some combination events, it's like my son has a simmering brain infection is the right way to think about it, because the nanoparticle aluminum can't get taken out. No one knows how to remove it.
Right. So it's there. It's there. Once it's there, it's there.
Yeah. And so, I really do believe that it's that simple, if you will.
Right.
That,
right.
When we added so many so early, because remember, timing relates to stage of brain development. So almost by definition, a 6-month-old child and a 5-year-old child are going to have a dramatically different reaction to the same number of vaccines. Okay. Perhaps an obvious statement, but not so obvious to our health authorities. And so when we decided that it would be a great idea to give Hep B on the first day of life, that was probably like the single most catastrophic decision that was made. That still happens in many parts of the U.S. and all over the world. Sometimes you don't get Hep B now till 3 months old. But that's like such a classic example of how stupid our health authorities are and how sad it is that we kind of govern how the rest of the world operates. Hep B is zero risk to a baby unless their mother.
I'm just thinking that. Why so early? Why on the first damn day?
What's interesting about, well, this is true with most of the shots. It's certainly true with Hep B. There is a strong argument that no one ever needs that vaccine. If you have an active Hep B infection, you can still go to public school in the United States because it's not deemed to be transmissible. So, and the only way to get it is through sex or IV drug use or like deep tongue kissing. And, you know, there aren't a lot of 5-year-olds that are engaging in those activities. So even giving it to anyone doesn't really make a lot of sense. Giving it to children makes no sense at all, except to the profits of vaccine makers. And I think that's what's so maddening for me is that there probably is a world where, you know, some number of shots could live in harmony with most kids and we wouldn't, you know, notice terrible things. But like everything else, we've overdone it. And, you know, I think the 1 in 36 number is probably 5 years old. The number is probably closer to 1 in 30 or 1 in 25 now. And I've never been to New Zealand. My wife has. But, you know, you can't walk down the street in the U.S. without seeing a kid. You know, I go to grocery stores and I see 2 or 3 in the store, you know, and as a parent, I can spot them in 5 seconds. And so it's a tragedy. As tragic as the damage that COVID vaccines have done to the populace, you know, with deep sympathy and respect for anybody who got suckered into taking that shot or got injured from it, it doesn't hold a candle to the scale of what we've done to these kids. And it's tragic. I'm honestly just a dad. I'm a business person. I have a capacity to write with like probably a blend of like a scientist, but also more accessible language for people. And so I've tried to use that skill to educate other parents about what I think has really happened. Right. And one of the articles you're referring to, and it's just such a classic thing. So I'll just take you back. Like, you know, they started to realize that tobacco was causing lung cancer, right? And, you know, you and I today are like, well, that's obvious. You're like sucking tar in your lungs. What the hell do you think was going to happen? Well, you know, we're injecting brain poison into babies and then wondering why there's all this neurological negative outcomes, right? It's equally stupid. But the tobacco industry was able to actually sow doubt and keep things at bay for 40 years.
Yeah.
They 40 did. Years. They commissioned scientists. They set up institutes. They sowed doubt. I mean, there's even a famous photo of all these CEOs of tobacco companies in Congress with their arms up, swearing to tell the truth, and then going down man by man. Does tobacco cause lung cancer? No. 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 You're like, so that's how diabolical people can be. And when it comes to autism, the stakes are so high, right? You have to recognize it destroys the vaccine program, right? If you acknowledge what's so obviously true to anybody who spends more than an hour looking,
it's over.
If you acknowledge it, it's over. And so the stakes are so high now that the behavior is becoming tobacco-esque, like in terms of what people will do. And one of the articles that I wrote about is this absurd, you almost don't even want to give it credence, but this absurd denialism of the presence of the epidemic, right? We have this whitewashing where, autism's just a different way of being. It's always been a beautiful part of our world, and isn't it wonderful? And look, I'm the parent of a child with autism. I really appreciate people who advocate for acceptance for my son. And I will tell you that versus 20 years ago, when I walked down the street with my son who has mannerisms and is obviously different, the level of tolerance for his differences is way higher than it used to be. And that is a gift. But you don't get to whitewash reality just because there's a, you know, you're trying to normalize something. And what's crazy is the people behind the, who are attempting to normalize the numbers, meaning they're trying to say it's always been the same. It hasn't actually gone up. As stupid as that sounds, the people who are at the core of doing that, guess who they all are? They're all related to the vaccine program, right? So it's this really
not surprised to hear
horrible,
that.
Nefarious thing that's going on. And then another crazy thing that I wrote about recently that I find absolutely fascinating. So Reagan signs the law in 86, right? And what most people don't understand is let's just talk about before COVID, because now things are getting really confusing. But before COVID, if I get a shot and like my arm falls off, right? And so I have an obvious case and I go to a lawyer and I say, we need to sue. I've been injured by this consumer product. The lawyer goes, yeah, no thanks. You got to go to vaccine court. We have a kangaroo justice system only for vaccines in Washington, D.C., where all cases related to vaccine injury have to go. And you're actually suing the Department of Justice, which is the legal arm of our government, and you're going up against Department of Justice lawyers. It's absurd, but it's what this 1986 law created, was a differential legal system, which I'm positive isn't even constitutional. We just haven't gotten it out of our system yet. So they set up this vaccine court in 1986. It's kind of bumping along, dealing with the various injuries that are happening from vaccines. And guess what happens? All of a sudden, the number of claims filed for autism goes through the roof.
Right. Yeah.
They didn't even have the word autism anywhere in the creation of the vaccine court or the vaccine injury consent. It had never come up. All of a sudden, you have literally tens of thousands of cases that appear in the course of 5 to 7 years. Autism. And so what they end up doing is they create what they call an omnibus, okay? And what they basically said was, there's too many cases. We're going to pick 4 test cases, meaning we'll dive into the details of that child, that child, that child, and that child. And if we see consistently that the children have had the autism caused by the vaccines, then we'll compensate everybody who's in this omnibus. Does that make sense? So it was a way for them to make for a more efficient process. So this is beautiful. I write about this on my blog. The first test case is a girl named Hannah Poling. Okay. Now, Hannah, her father was a neurologist working at the Kennedy Krieger Institute in Baltimore, which is associated with Johns Hopkins University. It is arguably the preeminent autism neurology facility in the world. Okay. Her father's a neurosurgeon from Georgetown, very smart guy, John Poling. And when she suffers a massive regression after a vaccine appointment, guess what he does? He gets her MRIs. He scans her brain. He does all the things that none of us, you know, kind of peasant parents could have done. Mm. And as he has said many times, I never would have believed it if I hadn't witnessed it myself. So he creates a case that is so ironclad and so well documented. And his daughter is the first test case in this omnibus thing. So literally the vaccine program is now hinging on this one child's case. Her name is Hannah Poling. It's a very famous case. But people don't understand the details. They just know that like it made the news for a while. So what happens is the special masters, which is what we call these judges, they have these weird names. And it's outside the normal U.S. legal system.
Sounds like the Masons or something.
It does. It's completely creepy. And they have final jurisdiction. You don't even have a jury. Like, and we're a jury trial, sue for anything kind of country. Right. And they present Hannah's case to the special master court. And it's ironclad, man. I mean, they're done. This girl had a massive regression after her vaccines and now has autism. So here's what they do. They had reserved the right with these test cases to settle any of them confidentially. So they pay Hannah's family $20 million and they can never say another word. And they move on to the next case and just bury it. So there's this kind of behavior everywhere for this ridiculous story. Whereas what's really true is it's blindly obvious what has happened to our children. I would say that 80% of the autism parents that I know blame the vaccines because we were by definition mainstream, right? If I hadn't been mainstream, I would have been much smarter and not done the stupid shots, right? But I wasn't. I was mainstream and I did what my pediatrician told me to do. And so all of us who realized what happened, we had to get there on our own through witnessing this with our own children. And once you've seen it with your own kids, like you really can't shut me up. Right? Like it happened. You will never take away my right to tell the truth about what happened to my son. Right? I'm not going to tell you what happened to your kid, but I will sure as hell tell you the truth about what happened to my son. And in this case, I believe millions and millions of other children. And I would just like to add, my son is a non-speaker, as are 40% plus of children with autism. He has mannerisms. At times, he has self-injurious behavior. We have had some amazing miracles with him as far as communication goes, but he's always going to live with us.
Yeah.
And he is the most important person in my world. I mean, I have three beautiful children. But when you have one who's down, it's just a different situation. I spend 5 to 6 hours a day with my son doing various activities. He is my oldest son is 24. I have a daughter who's about to leave the house to go to college. Jamie will always be with us. Jamie has never had a prom. He's never been on a sports team. He's never had a girlfriend. He's never had an iPhone. I mean, the list goes on and on. This is not a trivial thing, people. This is a devastating disability for a kid with autism. It is absolutely crushing for families. It destroys marriages. It bankrupts families. This is not developing a food allergy to dairy, which, by the way, can be very serious too. This is something far, far, far more devastating and debilitating. And, you know, it has absolutely changed the trajectory of my life and the way I live my life. Many positives because it opened my eyes, right? My family, when COVID came along, we were ready. There were no shots being done by us. And we were good. We'd seen this movie before, right? So Jamie gave us that gift. I've had many close friends who I've been able to advise to avoid the shots altogether who have perfectly healthy children. So Jamie has given that gift to other children, you know, and he has joy in his life and he now has friends and can communicate due to some miracles that happened with him. But, those of you who have, you know, kids with what I call the real autism, you know, it is brutal, man.
Does Jamie know, truly know what's hit him?
Yeah, so this opens a different avenue of our conversation that I'm equally passionate about in a very different way. And you read it in the bio. You know, on the one hand, I wrote a book called How to End the Autism Epidemic, which I don't think anybody can read that book and not say, he's right. Because the amount of science that I quote in there is really tough to get over once you've read it. On the other hand, Jamie and I wrote a book called Underestimated, and we made a movie called Spellers. And here's the basic premise of what I believe. And this is more of a belief system that I've now witnessed with my son. Autism is a devastating disability, but I actually believe it's a motor disability, not a cognitive disability. I think that for whatever reason, when those immune activation events are firing, they really mess with the motor control systems of these kids. And so a simple example I would use is that we all accept that Stephen Hawking is brilliant, even though he can't move. Now, what's different there is he used to be able to move and then he couldn't. But think about a stroke victim who loses the ability to either speak or move, and then they can kind of gain it back with time. I really think that kids like Jamie who are non-speakers are stroke victims with some kind of major motor imbalance going on. And so Jamie heard about this system called Spelling to Communicate. He started out by spelling on like a letter board, like just an 11 by 8 sheet of paper with an alphabet on it, and was sort of taught how to spell. And recognize what I'm doing right now. I'm using gross motor more than fine motor. He went from the letter board, right, to a keyboard. And today he types like you and I do. And
wow.
What came out of him was a brilliant soul with the same or greater cognitive ability than you and I combined. He's funny. He's grateful. He's astute. He's a math savant. And he's been watching his world go by the entire time. So when you ask me the question, which by the way, I used to have that question, does he even know he has autism? Because part of me hoped he was just in some sort of state of bliss that I didn't fully
understand. So he knew, and it's all internalized, and there's no way of expressing it. Man, that's...
Dude, he knew everything and was trying to figure out how to tell us the whole time. And
gosh,
couldn't get out of his mouth, couldn't get his fingers to move. Nobody was there to kind of help him learn how to do all that stuff. And
how do you deal with that?
I mean, he was 17. This is what the book is about. He was 17 before... We call them spellers. So I actually say that my son is a non-speaker, right? And that he's a speller. And there's a moment where a speller goes from kind of learning how to spell wrote words just to master the craft the way you'd learn how to swing a golf club to they call breaking open or becoming open, which is basically where he starts to convey his own thoughts and feelings. And like there was a moment where that happened with Jamie. That's like the most seminal, you know, moment of my life beyond like the birth of my kids.
And yeah. You've just described that. That must've been incredible.
I talk about it in the book, but we're like in a clinic down in San Diego in California where the best teacher in the country works. And I'm in the room with my dad. I'd asked my dad to come along because I kind of felt like we were on the brink and I wanted him to be there with me. My father, very close with Jamie, and he breaks open in the room. And there's no words to describe what that felt like. And what I would tell, you know, like if there's parents of children who are non-speakers who are listening, I mean, just watch the movie on YouTube called Spellers. I don't have to tell you anything else. Just watch it. And then just trust me when I tell you, parents, that the hit rate for kids getting open of non-speakers who I've like encouraged to try it is like almost 100%. Like I don't think there's an exception. I think that some take longer, you know, some have more challenging like motor going on, but they all get there. And the number of phone calls that I've received from friends of mine whose children have broken open, I can't even count anymore. And you know, it doesn't, Jamie's still disabled and he's still going to live with us. But what's changed for us now, and I describe it that the end of the tunnel used to be really dark, which was basically like, what the hell is going to happen when I die? Because I don't even know what this kid wants. And like, how do we make him happy? You know, there is now light. There is light. It's still hard. There are still hard days, but it's nowhere near as bad. And here's what's crazy. He was going to this autism school at the time here in Oregon, and they were treating him like a five-year-old, right? So one of the fundamental tenets of like this movement is we call it the presumption of competence, right? Why not just treat the kid normally? Like what's the big deal? Like, let's say you're wrong and they don't understand you. Like, isn't it better that way than to like talk to them like they're two when in fact they're 20, right? So this presumption of competence did not exist at my son's school. And he was basically getting like third grade level material at the age of 17. So we ripped him out of there. We put him into an online school program that's for any normal kid. He does it online. And now we're literally looking for colleges for Jamie to go to, or I don't know if you call it university or whatever, but you know, when you're
University.
So we're looking for a university for Jamie to attend as a normal student. I mean, if you told me that 5 years ago, I would have been like, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't have even given you the time of day that was a possibility. And I honestly, I had an inkling that he seemed to track things a lot better than I thought. And I really hoped that he was understanding what I was saying to him. And I consciously tried to talk to him in a normal cadence. And like I did to my other kids, I really didn't know what I was dealing with. And what happens is you get this brutal combination of joy and guilt when your kid breaks open. But the joy wins out because as much as the guilt hurt at the time, I was able to say to myself and my wife, you know, equally, I've been busting my ass to figure this out, man. Like I have no stone unturned. Like I have been leaving it. We like to say, I actually am an ex rugby player. You'll appreciate that. Right. So,
We do.
We like to say we leave it all in the field. We leave it all in the field. Right. So Handley's leave it all in the field. We were doing everything we could for this guy. And we finally hit the lottery. And if you're a parent of a non-speaker, just please watch the movie and then get after it. You know, just get after it. I promise you, if you commit yourself day in and day out to working with your kid, they're going to get there just like Jamie did.
I hope you don't mind me saying that's beautiful.
Yeah, man.
It's beautiful.
It is. No, I appreciate it. I mean, it's, you know, so we talk about the river of autism as like a helpful metaphor. Right now, our public health authorities and our pediatricians, they're pushing the kids into the river, right?
Yeah.
Knowingly pushing them into the river. We parents and some doctors are trying to pull them out, right? We're trying to pull them out. And to hell with anybody who asks me to accept autism, to hell with them.
There's a lot of that about, isn't there? There's a, like a, Is normalization the word, or like, you know?
It's a serial whitewashing of it. And again, there's a beautiful part of it. There really is. As a parent, I want people to accept my son for who he is. However, that was not what God intended. Okay? I love my son with every cell in my being. Having said that, I will never stop trying to help him get better, right? Get better.
So there's always hope still somewhere.
Massively so. And there'll be other innovations. And, you know, some kids, and here comes Jamie, by the way.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy. Oh, you need your headphones. There you go.
Wow. Yeah. Jamie's in the room.
Guest appearance.
Yeah.
So there are actually children who, you can close it, buddy. Thank you. There are actually children who receive an autism diagnosis and their parents put them on a gluten-free, dairy-free diet and they start seeing doctors and taking supplements and they completely flip back to normal. I know plenty of those kids. Okay. They basically gave the body enough healthiness to kind of like figure it out. I mean, the body's a beautiful, magical thing that should largely be, I think, left alone to do what, you know, nature and God have allowed it to do. And there are parents who we call that biomedical intervention. And there are kids who have gone through that and have recovered completely. And God bless them. I wish Jamie was one of them. And then there's kids like Jamie who we tried all that exact same stuff. And it definitely made him healthier and better in a lot of ways, but it never got his speech back. And then we've been blessed to find Spelling to Communicate. And he's 22. We're every day is a project to help him optimize his life and get better and get healthier. And, you know, all this writing that I do and warning that I do of parents, it's largely therapeutic for me, I think.
I was going to ask you, what has this done for you? Well, and your family, obviously. Well, but, you know, I've got three kids, never had a problem in that line, though they were vaccinated. But we held off a few years there, but that's another story. Yeah. But I'm just thinking here, how does that change? Well, the changes in life are obvious. You've described some of them. But what does that, I mean, your life could have been different.
Yeah.
So much different. It's kind of fallen to you.
Yeah. So first of all, massive cognitive dissonance and then unmasking of like so many things that are corrupt in my case and in my wife's case. Massive disillusionment with authority. Okay. My wife and I were both probably already prone that way, but we were pretty mainstream. We'd gone to like a really good college and gotten like the mainstream job. You know, nobody would have felt sorry for like my wife and I. You know what I mean? We were bumping along, doing pretty well in life with the system, right? We were benefiting from the system and a part of it, you know, knowingly or unknowingly. So the first thing was just like literally going behind the matrix, right? Like from like being a part of it and indifferent to it. So, you know, Jamie really forced an awakening for me and my wife that wouldn't have otherwise happened. Because I explained to you that I've always been in that lower quadrant, the loud nonconformist, I just couldn't shut up once I found out what happened to Jamie. I mean, I was taking out full page ads in USA Today in 2005, trying to warn parents about vaccines causing autism. And
okay.
My work life is in the financial community, which basically means like I buy and sell private companies for a living. And on the one hand, that was good because it's a very capitalist driven kind of business where, you know, I wasn't like a doctor where it would have ruined me, but I did pay a price for it because they did a good job up until COVID. They had almost marginalized us to like the insane asylums in terms of character, you know. The gaslighting was so powerful and well done that I was starting to notice like at cocktail parties and whatnot, like I was kind of like the branded lunatic in the room. And
I know that one.
Yeah. You know, and like whatever, you know, like I'm pretty at peace with that kind of stuff. Like I'm, you know, if you met me in person, you'd probably think like he doesn't really give a shit what anybody else thinks. And that's kind of who I am. But it did have a cost because, you know, but at the end of the day, like I knew I was right. So that was different. And then, you know, having a kid down is just, it's stressful. It weighs on the other children. It's sad. It can be really, really heartbreaking. Like, self-injurious behavior is very common of these kids when they get really agitated, and having to bear witness to that as many times as I have is deeply traumatizing. You know, if you have empathy, then the sense that your child has been completely fucked by this whole thing is really hard to shake. And I think that as a man with a lot of masculinity, for the first 5 years, the emotion that was the hardest one for me to control was how angry I was.
Yeah, I can imagine.
All right. And I metaphorically wanted to kill these people, metaphorically, right? And I was just irate. And then I happen to be pretty smart. I can read science. I'm really good with numbers. I'm not intimidated by people's intellect who have a medical degree. That doesn't intimidate me. And so I started to look into this stuff, and I was just astounded at these idiots. And more so, there are no bigger whores on the planet than doctors and scientists, okay? Business actually has a code of ethics. We have our examples of, you know, Bernie Madoff or this person or that person. They get cleaned out. But by and large, you know, you're in business. If you're dirty, like, you're done. You know, your reputation is everything. These doctors and scientists are whores. It's unbelievable. And
I think a lot of us have now thinking like you on that.
And they have sold us down the river. And the orthodoxy is just unbelievable. You know, I did an interesting podcast many years ago that I just reposted. I'm just starting to repost everything, and I'll explain to you why in a moment. But I did a podcast interview with a woman named Katie Wright. And that name may not mean much to you, but think about this for a moment. The most powerful autism charity in the world is a charity called Autism Speaks. And when I say powerful, hundreds of millions a year in donations, the only autism charity that the federal government would ever listen to. And it was founded in the early 2000s by the grandfather of a boy with autism. Okay, now this grandfather happened to be a man named Bob Wright, who at that moment in time was the chairman and CEO of NBC, one of the three largest broadcast companies in the country. Okay, so Bob Wright had tremendous power and tremendous sway to bring celebrities into the fold. He had a grandson with autism. The one inconvenient part of the entire Autism Speaks story is that the mother of this boy was 100% convinced that the vaccines had caused his autism.
Okay.
And in fact, and her name is Katie Wright, and she's the woman that I interviewed. And to take it even to another level, Christian Wright, her beautiful son, who's roughly my son's age now, had one of the most tragic regressions that I've personally ever witnessed, because Christian was talking in full sentences and is now a non-speaker with autism. His regression was massive and undeniable, and it happened right after a vaccine appointment. And like many other parents, Katie has refused to ever shut her mouth about what actually happened to Christian. And her parents, well-meaning as they were, set up this giant foundation and promised all these things about how they would actually study the environmental causes of autism, which is a euphemism for vaccines. And what happened was that Autism Speaks got corrupted by all the same powers that you and I know. And they found ways to basically marginalize Katie and gaslight her and do all these things. And today, Autism Speaks is a woke organization from hell whose only goal is inclusion. That nasty...
Why am I not surprised to hear that?
And what's fascinating is Katie is as resolute as ever for what happened to Christian, like so many of us are. And yet this ridiculous organization gets corrupted by these profiteers. They realize they can't get government money if they ever say the V word. They realize there's big salaries in it for them, and they can keep this thing going in perpetuity. And what impact has Autism Speaks had on the rate of autism? You know the answer. It's just gotten worse.
Yeah.
We're around. And so it was fascinating, you know, to listen to Katie. And one of the things that she talked about was I was just kind of asking her, like, how could your parents do this? Like, let this organization, they basically marginalized and got her out of it.
Yeah, good question.
Right? I mean,
good question.
I'd never talk to my dad again if that happened, right? I mean, I would never talk to my parents again. And she explained it, but she also left out a ray of hope. She said, you know, my dad has always trusted and loved doctors. They've saved his life. He had cancer. He believes in them. But she did tell a story that he went down to the CDC, which is our Centers for Disease Control, which is basically the Death Star of all this stuff, right? And he wanted to understand how they monitored injuries and that kind of thing. And she explains in the podcast that he quickly realized two things. Number one, that most of these people were idiots, that they weren't impressive people at all, because they're government jackasses working at a public health site. And number two, they didn't want to know. They did not want to know. They just didn't want to know. And that's and this is what happens. It's not my problem. That, you know, my boss and, you know, like everybody's sort of hands off. And every time someone tries to blow the whistle, of course, they get dogpiled and pulled out of there. And so he did leave. You know, he was on a book tour a few years ago and I was listening to him, and he would at least say that he was really disappointed in the CDC. That was like as far as he would go. But this is a guy going to cocktail parties in the Hamptons, and nobody wants to be called an anti-vaxxer. That's being called it. The only thing worse than anti-vaxxer is like puppy killer, right? And they might actually be synonyms, you know? At least that was true in 2019. Now we're having a renaissance, man.
Yeah, making a comeback.
Thanks to people like your prime minister, we're back on top. We're like the, you know, like, it's not that extreme, but it's certainly way more okay now for me to be like skeptical and all that other stuff. And the thing I was going to tell you, part of why I've kind of like lit up my Substack lately, and I'm telling you, if you're a parent and you're on the fence about vaccines, just please just read the articles. They're free. You don't have to pay for them. Just go read them. But the reason that I'm putting it out there is I am on my knees praying that Donald Trump wins the presidency. Because if he does,
okay.
If he does, the one human being right now who can and will end the autism epidemic is Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah, I was going to ask you before we got to the end what you thought about that. You've just gone there, so I don't need to, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bobby is a close personal friend of mine.
Okay, yeah.
And when he came through Oregon, we hosted a fundraiser for Bobby, and I've known Bobby for over a decade. I consider him a friend. We text each other. Bobby's real. Bobby's real. Bobby knows exactly what's happened to our kids. Bobby's father and his uncle were legitimately committed to removing corporate influence from regulatory agencies. They understood.
Well, that tells you a lot about history then, doesn't it?
Well, it does indeed. What a shock. They killed them both. And they were, and Bobby lives by the same moral standards. And I've had personal conversations with Bobby about these topics. He is the only person on the planet, well, not the only, there's several that I hope he brings to the government with him, who understand the totality of this issue. And if he's given the opportunity, he will appropriately and justly put an end to this madness. And so I'm praying every night that Donald Trump wins. Donald Trump, in his first presidency, got absolutely, positively steamrolled by the public health establishment, who made him look like a fool. And while people like Ron DeSantis were standing up and telling the truth, Donald Trump was kowtowing to Tony Fauci. And it's, in my opinion, he didn't have the intellectual capacity to understand the gravity of the issue. To his credit, he obviously would never admit that, but he did admit that he had no idea how many people you have to give jobs to in a new administration, and the swamp basically just reappeared. Yeah. And so Donald Trump's choice to partner with Bobby Kennedy is, in my opinion, one of the smartest decisions that he's ever made. And I just pray every day that they win. And I figured if they win, my Substack is something Bobby can turn to just kind of reacclimate himself reference. With the facts. Yeah. And if they lose, I hope it stays on Substack so people can, during the next dark period, at least find some truth out there. I'll probably get deplatformed as I did during Biden's. You know, I lost every Facebook, Twitter. It all went away, right? It all went away. Then Elon bought Twitter, and now everything's kind of changed for the moment. But I feel like if Kamala wins, it'll start all over again, you know. But in the meantime, I'm just praying every day that that Donald Trump wins and that Bobby's allowed into the administration.
J.B. Hanley, that's an incredible story. You tell it incredibly well. It's a beautiful story. I know it's elements of it aren't, but just listening to it, just incredible. You're a fine person.
You know, I appreciate those words. And a lot of the journey has been really positive. I'm 55 years old now. My eyes are wide open. I'd like to think I've made a little bit of change out there. People sort of say, well, if you could do it all over again, it's like, well, wait a minute. I'd rather be oblivious and have my son be healthy.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
So I can never say that it was a fair trade because the expense to him was too high. You know what it's like as a parent. You can put a bullet in me. I don't give a shit. It's that you're my kid.
Totally.
You know, and the price that Jamie's had to pay is never going to be okay with me. I think there's probably a part of me that puts myself out there publicly to show him that I love him.
Yeah.
Right. I think that, like, if you read the book Underestimated that I wrote, one parent said to me, you know, this reads like a love letter to your son. And I was like, you know what? That's exactly what it is. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the love I have for him is probably where I get most of my energy from to remain involved with this. And it's a way for me to honor. And when idiots like Paul Offit and Peter Hotez, they try to paper over what happened to my son, they dishonor my son through that process. And as you know, as a lion dad and a warrior dad, I don't play that, man.
Don't do that.
I don't play that.
Yeah, never do
that.
Don't
do that.
Yep.
No, I will leave it all in the field. I will leave it all in the field. And so that's where my motivation comes from. I appreciate your heartfelt questions. I can tell that you're a man of character. I'm so happy that Reality Check Radio exists. I'm so glad that the Kiwis are standing up and telling the truth and realizing what got done to them. I hope your audience keeps growing and that, you know, more and more people just appreciate the truth. You guys had like the worst prime minister and government like on the planet. And what they did to you guys is unconscionable. And they're just like remarkably stupid and corrupt. Like, it's just unbelievable, you know, that people are that dumb, and they probably had terrible advisors too. I don't relish how many people's lives were hurt by that. I do relish that the truth is coming out and they're looking like the imbeciles that they always were. It's just unfortunate the cost involved in like that happening.
Thank you for those words. So great to have you on our radio station. And I'm going to seek out the YouTube doco and the books. Thank you, JB Handley, for coming on. It's been great.
My sincere pleasure. All right. Have a great day.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.